This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. A Democratic lawmaker is hoping to put some regulations back on the telecommunication industry that were lost a couple of years ago in Wisconsin. State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma is introducing a bill this week that would require phone companies in Wisconsin to maintain telephone landlines. Senator Vinehout says consumers need the protection, especially in southwestern Wisconsin.
There are a lot of very spotty areas of cell coverage. The Coulee region is a beautiful area to live in, but one of the downsides is in those valleys, there just isn't cell coverage. People rely on landlines to do their business, whether it be farming or an in-town business with the small towns that aren't covered by cell coverage. People rely on landlines for communicating with their family, sometimes for safety reasons. There's farm accidents, there's things that happen in the country, and we need to get service right away. But the landline is the only way we can contact the fire or police, and they're critical for business, too.
Do you have any idea how many people still rely on landlines?
Unfortunately, one of the parts of this bill when it passed was to take away the requirement that we map where we have things like broadband coverage.
And a lot of the more modern, if we call them modern types of phone coverage, is using broadband, using that fiber optic to provide both internet and telephone service. But because we don't have that information, all I have is anecdotal information.
You are working on a bill that would make sure that people have access to landlines. We'll get into the nuts and bolts of that bill first, but I think it'd be good for people to understand kind of how we've gotten to this point. There was a bill that was passed in 2011 that essentially deregulated the telephone industry in the state. Can you explain what happened then?
In the spring of 2011, there was a bill that was called the Telecommunications Modernization Act. It was a bill that was introduced simultaneously in roughly 20 states around the country. It was done in Wisconsin at the height of the discussion of a very dramatic budget. So it was a bill that did not get much attention. What the bill did, among other things, was to eliminate consumer protection. The kinds of consumer protection I'm speaking of have to do with oversight on rates, how much you pay on your phone bill, and the quality of services. So, for example, I have a phone line that I use for my state business. Every time I pick it up and they're mowing the roadsides, it's crackly. That's an example of poor quality service. The consumer protection for landline customers went away when that bill passed. And in that bill, as part of the consumer protection, was a provision that we technically call the provider of last resort. And what that means is if I don't have any other coverage on my farm, I can't get cell coverage, there's no other company that will give me coverage, my phone company cannot eliminate my landline. Now, that's important if you live out in the country because it's expensive to maintain the copper lines that lead out to all these different places that are at the end of the Coulee Road that makes our western Wisconsin neighborhood so beautiful to live in, but it's also expensive to maintain. In that bill was something that we call in legislative language a sunset. What that means is there was a date attached to this particular part of the law, and once that date passed, the telephone companies no longer had to follow that part of the law. That date passed this spring. So at that point, there was no state law that said the companies had to keep those home phones.
So since April 30th, have any phone companies changed what they're doing?
Well, I found this out when I happened to be on the East Coast visiting relatives and I got a copy of a local newspaper. And in that newspaper was the description of what was happening in Fire Island, New York, which was hit very hard by Hurricane Sandy. The copper lines were waterlogged. Some of them were damaged. Some of them were damaged during cleanup because they didn't know where the lines were. The company in New York decided to not rebuild the copper lines, but there wasn't adequate cell coverage on Fire Island, and people were very upset. Another part of the article told me that in the Washington, D.C. suburbs, the telephone company there was replacing the copper lines or refusing to maintain the copper lines and telling customers the only way they were going to get service was to upgrade to some type of fiber optic service, what the company would call modernization. The problem is there is no requirement for the company to either maintain the line or to provide that upgraded service, except for an FCC ruling that we were told in 2011 would supersede any state law anyway. The problem now is that AT&T is petitioning the FCC to ask for another ruling to do away with that requirement. When that happens, and it seems possible that it will, when that happens, we will have no protection here in Wisconsin for all residents who live in an area where they can't get quality, reliable cell coverage.
But we haven't reached that point yet. Even though that April 30th date passed, there haven't been any companies that have yanked out the copper wire phone lines yet, have there?
To my knowledge, not in Wisconsin.
Okay.
But it did make me a bit worried when I read about this in New York and on the East Coast and realized that now Wisconsin was vulnerable.
So in going back to this bill that passed in 2011, when I was doing some research on it, I found that proponents were saying that the bill was necessary just because you have quote-unquote phone companies that are also branching into internet, into cable TV providers. So the playing field wasn't equal for everyone. And I also thought that competition would bring on better prices for consumers. When it comes to what the proponents had hoped for, have we seen any changes regarding prices and whatnot?
That's a very good question. And we have a little bit of history on this type of bill. The people who pushed this bill in 2011 also pushed a cable and video service provider deregulation bill in 2007. So we have a little bit more history to understand what happens in an area that has been deregulated. And there was an audit that was done a couple years after that 2007 bill passed that said, to the extent that the auditors were able to determine, competition did not lower price, and in some cases actually raised prices. And part of the problem we see, especially affecting us in rural areas and even in poor inner city areas, if there is no requirement to provide service to an area, and that area is difficult to serve, either because people are so poor they don't always pay their bill, or people live so far away it takes a long cable to reach out to them, in these areas, there is no service. So, for example, and many of your listeners know, in western Wisconsin, it's impossible to get any type of fiber optic cable coverage to many rural areas. It's just a fact of life. And most of those companies have no intention of ever serving those areas. Well, it might be a little different to say, I'm not going to be able to get Charter cable, or to say, I'm not going to be able to get any type of landline service. Charter cable, I've got a choice. I could probably find internet by satellite. Might not be quite as good, but I could probably find it. Not so for an area that's not served by cell coverage, never going to be served by fiber optics, and if the landline is pulled, that's the only method of communication. When I spoke with constituents about this at the half dozen county fairs I've been in the last few weeks, they were absolutely very angry. They were worried, they were scared, and for some of the business people I talked to, they said, there's no question, I'd be put out of business. My local pharmacy told me that they used their landline for all of their credit cards and all of their insurance claims. They simply couldn't function without their landline. This now has become an issue of the public good. It has become an issue of public safety, and that's why I'm introducing this bill this week.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Senator Kathleen Vinehout. She's a Democrat from Alma who will be introducing a bill regarding landlines. Let's talk about the details within this bill. It essentially says, as you mentioned before, the provider of last resort would not be able to yank out the copper wires that provide that landline service. Is that correct?
Yes, that's correct. And there's been a lot of discussion among my colleagues in the legislature about other aspects of the 2011 law. There are people that would like to put back in place the consumer protections for rate regulation so that bills don't go through the roof, and people who would like to put back their consumer requirements for service quality so that when you pick up the line, there's actually a good voice you can hear on the other end and not a lot of crackling. But it is my hope that we can keep this bill as specific as possible, focused only on the protection of having that landline. If there's no one else that you can go to, you know that you're going to at least still have your home phone. And I am working with the Association of Retired Persons, who are very interested in supporting this bill because they have so many people that rely on that landline for safety. So elderly people are contacted, or any disabled person or anybody is contacted every couple of days by their family or their neighbors. And there's constantly a communication to make sure that people know that if there's any problem or anything they need, there's somebody there that can help them. And of course, if they fall and they have their lifeline button, that button works when that they press it, so that they know that the law enforcement or the ambulance will be notified. And these are really critical safety issues that people in rural areas depend upon.
And another part of this bill, basically it said that the Public Service Commission can order a company to comply by any means necessary. Does that mean that if a phone company said, we want to do away with the landlines, but they were the provider of last resort, could they offer not only just a landline, but if they didn't want that, you know, like internet-based voice service or improved cell service? Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
The bill is a little difficult to understand because our telecommunications law is exceedingly complex, and there are all kinds of different terms. And if you get a chance to look at the bill, you'll need a lawyer to help you read it, and I definitely needed a lawyer to help me write it. The reason why this provision that you mentioned is in the bill is so that there is some enforcement power by the Public Service Commission. Sometimes we pass bills in the legislature. I say we collectively, the legislature itself, some senators and representatives will pass a bill because it kind of feels good, but when it comes right down to it, there's no way to enforce it. Well, that really doesn't help much. We want to make sure, and I want to make sure, that if the person is in a situation where they're losing their home phone, that the state, through the Public Service Commission, can step in and tell that phone provider, you cannot do that. And in order to do that, I have to give the teeth to the watchdog. And that's what the language does that you described.
There's also this waiver that under that 2011 bill that companies could apply for. And I'm assuming it was an exemption waiver of some sort. And this would do away with that waiver, correct?
I would describe the waiver process as a loophole. It's basically a way for the company to say to the state who's regulating the telecommunications industry, what we call the Public Service Commission, it's a way for the state, for the company to say, oh, but I have these problems and I want this special permission to not have to follow the law. At this point, there is no reason why a company should not follow the law. And this would say that the waiver process that existed, that waiver process would go away. There wouldn't be any waivers for this particular part of the law.
Have any companies applied for that waiver in Wisconsin?
Well, the reason we wrote the law the way it was because it's my understanding that about 5 years ago, there was a company in a local co-op in Wood County that did ask for a waiver and, to my knowledge, probably had a very good reason for applying for that waiver. This law would not change the old waivers that are in place. So keep
that. They'd be grandfathered
in. They'd be grandfathered in, right? But it wouldn't allow for any new waivers.
Okay. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Senator Kathleen Finehout, a Democrat from Alma. We're talking about a bill regarding landlines that she'll be introducing this week in the state legislature. So, as you alluded to before, this is more than a state issue. This is a national issue. I mean, the phone companies are ultimately regulated by the Federal Communications Commission. So how do you balance what's going on nationally with what's going on in this state?
Well, in many parts of the law, there is both a state and a federal component. Banking is a good example. In telecommunications law, there is a federal and a state component. In, for example, other video service providers or cable companies, there was a state and a federal law. In some cases, the state law was stricter than the federal law, and this protected Wisconsin consumers and many times goes back to a particular problem that happened years ago, and that's why the law is the way it is, and we've kind of forgotten that because the law fixed the problem. In this case, my bill would be able to continue, would help us continue to protect Wisconsin consumers, even if the FCC allowed the telecommunications industry to not have to follow the provider of last resort law at the federal level. And I can see how Wisconsin is in a bit of a unique position, especially because of the terrain of western Wisconsin. It's very expensive. If you think about the beautiful coulees that surround us in western Wisconsin, it's very expensive to put a cell tower in every coulee and on every bluff to be able to provide 100% coverage. When I look around, I think it's probably never going to happen. That means that we're going to need some type of service for a very long time. And because you can't really go up over the hills and back down them in order to run a cable, it's unlikely that we're ever going to have 100% coverage with fiber optic cables either. So I believe that there's a compelling reason for us here in our state to have this protection. It's a protection we've had for a long, long time, and it's a protection that I believe needs to be returned.
When I talk with representatives from some of the major phone companies, they say with technology evolving so much, it's almost inevitable that landlines will be done away with and that they could improve technology. Verizon, for example, has a way that you can set up almost like a wireless cell service within a home, but then you have a landline phone, and that's an option. Are these good options, though? I mean, will technology come to the point where we will be okay here?
Well, Verizon is the company that was pulling the landlines in the article that I read about on the East Coast. Yep. So I'm not at all surprised that that's what Verizon said. And it very well may be true in the suburbs of Washington, D.C., where it's nice and flat and it's easy to, there's lots of cell towers and it's easy for this type of technology for us to evolve to this type of technology. But western Wisconsin is a very different type of terrain. It's very rural. We have rugged bluffs. We have a lot of gravel roads. We have people that live way back in the coulee. And I certainly do not see anyone laying cable to go out there to the end of the coulee road in a neighborhood, for example, that I live in and many of my constituents. And I also don't see, when I talk with the cell companies, I don't see them putting a tower at the end of every coulee road. And that's pretty much what they tell me they would need, is that all these farmers that live or people that live at the end of a coulee road, they need their own cell tower. Well, I don't think that that's going to happen, which makes me think that it may be a long time before people in western Wisconsin have this type of new technology that's being described. And it may be we evolve to an even a new technology that we can't even imagine right now. But meanwhile, for the next decade or so, we need that protection. And when people I represent talk with me about what this would do to their family, to their farm, to their business, to their elderly relatives, they tell me with great intensity, Kathleen, you cannot let this happen.
What does this mean for the rural telephone providers, like the different co-ops in the area?
There are a number of rural telephone providers, cooperatives, that are working very hard to do what we call build out broadband. They're working in their particular area. Unfortunately, the map of western Wisconsin in terms of the areas that are carved out by different rural telephone companies, by multinational corporations, by Madison or other companies from other areas, it looks a bit like a quilt made with very small pieces of material. So that means that we have very uneven service. And the telephone co-ops will tell me, Kathleen, we're doing the very best we can. And I certainly believe that that's true. And their customers are very well served. But a customer in the next valley that's served by another company cannot get service at all. And those are the problems that this bill would address.
And beyond the spotty service for people living in rural areas, I wonder, too, if landlines were to become a thing of the past 5, 10, 20 years down the line, what exactly does that mean for offices, for businesses? I mean, even here on the UW-La Crosse campus, we're all connected by landlines. As a reporter, I call most of my sources via a landline.
Many people that live in urban areas tell me that their self-coverage is not very good. We are right now in a recording studio in the basement, and I bet if we pulled out our phones that we wouldn't get cell coverage. So this is a great example of why we should not remove landlines in any part of the state if there's not adequate cell coverage. And just because you don't live in the country doesn't mean you shouldn't pay attention to what we've been talking about.
Do you think there are any protections when it comes to large systems like a university system that's so connected by a telephone service? I guess we can look at what happened with WiskNet, the internet provider for the universities and whatnot. I don't know if those two issues are related, but...
Well, they're related in a very interesting way. They're related because the people that would like to change them, that would like them to change, are the same. And those people have a great deal of money to lobby the legislature, and they have a great deal of money to influence campaigns. And it makes me quite concerned when we're making decisions that are not in the public's interest, but are in the interest of a couple of very large corporations. And that's not the way the state should act. We should stop and think and make decisions that are in the public's interest. And that's why I'm asking my colleagues on both sides of the aisle to support this bill this week.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Democratic Senator Kathleen Vinehout from Alma. We're talking about a bill she's introducing regarding landlines. How do you envision the future of landlines 5, 10, 20, 30 years down the line?
Well, we have to make sure that that landline not only continues to exist, but that the line is maintained. So if I'm successful in doing this bill, and if the companies are successful in not maintaining the lines, I can see a time when we may have to revisit this bill and say, not only do we need to pay attention to the existence of the line, but also to the quality of service. I also think that over the years, as companies move to more expensive service and it becomes more expensive for them to maintain that line at the end of the Cooley Road, that the companies are going to say, you, Mr. and Mrs. Smith, that live on the farm at the end of the Cooley Road, you're going to have to pay a lot more. And one of the concerns that we had when this bill, my colleagues and I had when this bill became law in 2011, was that people would no longer be able to afford basic service because the rate protections went away with the law. So this is an issue that may continue to evolve as time goes on. And maybe there'll be a time when we have a technology that can cover everyone in every coulee all across western Wisconsin and every basement and every city all across our great state. But we're not there yet.
I mean, this is an extremely complex issue, telecom law and whatnot. You're facing multi-billion-dollar corporations, national, worldwide companies, and for them, it seems to just come down to money. It's expensive to maintain the landlines. But what does this mean for people? I mean, how do you, just for the residents at the end of the road in the coulee, what does this mean for them? How does this translate for them?
This translates into their safety. their quality of life, their ability to conduct their business. There are a whole lot of people who are running small businesses, including farms at the end of the Cooley Road. And even as I mentioned, the folks that work in all of our river towns up and down the beautiful highways along the bluffs of the Mississippi River, they tell me they can't continue to operate. They need that home, that landline, to be able to process their credit cards, communicate with other businesses, and conduct their business. So this would have a huge impact on people all throughout the state.
When you introduced a handful of amendments in 2011 regarding the telephone deregulation bill, you said the amendments failed. Do you have hope that maybe this time around that this bill could indeed pass, or do you think it's going to be an uphill battle?
Well, everything, if you're a Democrat in Madison these days, is an uphill battle, but that doesn't mean that we can't find some common ground. The bills that I've had so far have had a difficult time getting a hearing, but there are bills that I've worked on with people from both sides of the aisle that have passed, which is encouraging. Bills from the Audit Committee, for example. This is a bill that I've drafted, meaning I've written very narrowly. Although there are many issues that we've discussed today, the bill only deals with pulling that copper line out so your phone doesn't work. This is a bill that is being supported by AARP, which has a nationwide presence of many people who are over 50 who realize how important the line is. And this is a bill that affects rural legislators regardless of party, especially rural legislators in western Wisconsin.
Democratic State Senator Kathleen Vinehout of Alma talking about a bill she's introducing this week that would require Wisconsin phone companies to maintain existing landlines. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Telephone companies are not thrilled with the landline bill. Verizon does not own landlines anymore in the state, but its executive director of state government affairs, Mike McDermott, says it's hard to predict what the evolving technology of the industry will be. Plus, technology already exists that people don't have to rely on landlines.
Verizon used to have a landline presence, primarily rural in Wisconsin, up until, maybe 4 years now, that we spun that property off to Frontier. So Frontier currently owns and maintains the former Verizon landline property. And we have what we call enterprise customers that are mostly national customers. They're not your traditional landline and are not viewed as traditional landline by the Public Service Commission. But we also have a very strong wireless presence in Wisconsin.
So is that sort of the direction that maybe you see the industry evolving, is that companies like Verizon or AT&T, they can be the sole wireless providers, and then you have these smaller companies like Frontier or whatnot that can be the rural providers for landlines?
That's the reality of how telecom evolved in Wisconsin, where you have it's not just an incumbent, what they call an incumbent local exchange provider like AT&T, which at one time was SBC, and before that it was Ameritech, before that Wisconsin Bell. So they have a service territory that they cover, and you have a lot of the rural providers are much smaller telecom cooperatives, mostly members of the Wisconsin State Telecom Association or Telecommunications Association, WSTA. There are rural providers, these small rural cooperatives and small companies that have been servicing rural customers for over 100 years in Wisconsin. Quite ably, and those companies need to address the technology that is evolving going forward and how they're going to be viable. And those are decisions those companies have to make individually.
You know, and when I read like national stories regarding like AT&T and Verizon and predictions that 10 years from now there aren't even going to be landlines, is that kind of what we could be seeing in Wisconsin too?
The predictions are often just that. They're not really based in anything other than seeing trends of technology evolution within the industry. You know, I remember growing up watching the Jetsons, and people said by this time we'd be flying around in our own little George Jetson car, and that's just not reality today either, is it?
Unfortunately, no.
No, it's not. but there have been great advances in terms of automobile manufacturing. So not to digress. But at the end of the day, technology is evolving. Wireless technology is evolving in a way that when we started out in 1983, when the first wireless network was built, which was actually on Verizon's network, launched commercially in Chicago, was the first test market. The first commercial call was made in Chicago in October of 1983. From that ceremonial call, you have the networks that are built out today. And that was on an analog network back in 1983. And then in 1986, I'd say between 1983 and 1996, the technology evolved to be digital. So they went from being analog to digital. That evolution saw an increase in the technology for wireless. Then when the Telecom Act of 96 came along, you saw a proliferation of carriers who were looking to compete. Then you saw Sprint, and we had AT&T was its own separate company, and there was Singular, and you had and then Verizon came together in 2000, and Singular came together in 2000 to be national companies. You had Nextel, so there were seven national providers of wireless telecommunications. Now that's consolidated to be four national providers today, with strong regional presence with U.S. Cellular. So consumers have choices. But the technology then moved to what they call the first gen would be arguably analog and early digital, and then the second gen was digital with different capabilities, and then third generation was data, and then the fourth generation now is data with broadband speeds, with ultra-high speed bandwidth in the 700 megahertz spectrum, where the carriers have purchased the old, UVH channels that were cleared and provided for on the open auction for carriers to bid on to provide the next generation of wireless technology, which is a constant evolution of wireless technology. But to your question, that does provide an opportunity for a straight wireless player like Verizon in Wisconsin to offer innovative products and services to rural customers that they don't have today, or didn't have yesterday, but they do today, like Home Phone Connect or Home Fusion. And Home Phone Connect allows the rural customer to experience an identical experience to their landline service today over a wireless network.
So it's like a cell phone that you could plug in, like your landline telephone into?
Yes, there's a Home Phone Connect device. It's a little bulb, like a not a bulb, but a little. It's hard to explain how big it is, but it's half a loaf of bread, maybe.
Okay.
And but sleek and not. It doesn't take up any counter space at all, and you plug that into a jack in the home and unplug the line coming in, the old copper line that's coming in from the outside from the pole. You disconnect that, and then all of the circuits on that jack in the house will have a dial tone absolutely identical to the landline dial tone, with three-way calling, caller ID, voicemail, nationwide calling, all and as long as you want to talk, unlimited talk.
So is something like that
for $20 a month?
Sure. Is that available in Wisconsin currently?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So then when people say that a bill like this is needed because of people in rural areas or because some elderly people don't like using cell phones, is this like a good alternative, or how do you respond to that?
I think it's a terrific alternative, especially for seniors on a fixed income, because this product, as it's priced, was I believe it's still $20 a month for unlimited talk time, nationwide calling, three-way calling, caller ID, and voicemail. And there's no infrastructure costs to bring that service to the last farmhouse in the last county of Wisconsin.
So if a bill like this was to pass, I mean, would it have any sort of effect on Verizon?
No, not at all.
And the other thing, too, that's interesting to me is that, you know, I understand that the state's trying to take some action when it comes to this. But ultimately, I mean, this is going to be up to the FCC when you look 10, 15 years down the line.
Let me try to back you up about how far out 10 or 15 years is in the telecom industry.
Sure.
The iPhone's 6 years old. The Android, the iPhone operating system is 6 years old. The Android operating system is about 5 years old, 5.5 years old. And the Apple App Store is 6 years old.
Wow.
For the iPhone. The Android, what they call Google Play Store, is only 5.5 years old. So, and tablets are only 3 years out. And they become so iconic so quickly that 15 years ago was the beginning of the telecom explosion in technology and options and competition. You know, really started around 1997 in earnest with the proliferation of the carriers, nationwide carriers and whatnot. So 10 or 15 years out is it could be it's just very difficult to even think that far out. You know, we have to think 15 months instead of 15 years.
Mike McDermott is Executive Director of State Government Affairs for Verizon of Wisconsin, talking about a bill that would require companies to provide landlines. While Verizon does not own any landlines in Wisconsin, CenturyLink does. CenturyLink spokesperson Kim Valiquette in La Crosse says they oppose the bill and believe telephone providers should not be limited by government regulation. She says it may be in the best interest of the state and federal governments to subsidize phone companies to help them maintain rural service.
If you have like one provider trying to provide service to a very remote location, it can be quite costly. And if the government can find a way to assist with funding with that service, then it makes it easier not only for CenturyLink but any other provider of last resort to be able to maintain service to those more rural areas.
CenturyLink provides landlines in 200 communities, including many rural parts of Wisconsin. Valiquette says CenturyLink is planning to continue offering landline service to its Wisconsin customers. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Coming up next, more on a bill designed to close a skills gap and put more people back to work in Wisconsin. Archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, extended interviews, photos, and links can be found on our website at WPR.org/lacrosse. You can also like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. A bill designed to close Wisconsin's skills gap had a public hearing last week in a state Senate committee. The bill would provide $10 million in competitive grants to help meet skilled worker training needs. The bill is co-authored by Democratic State Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska, who talks about the skills gap issue and how the proposed grant program would help.
There's this disconnect where, you know, we're looking to get people employed, but yet we don't have the match-up of what the skills are and the jobs that are available. And that mismatch is what we're trying to deal with in this particular situation. You know, for example, the two that we hear most commonly are welders and nurses. They could hire a ton of them right now if they were available, but they're not. The workforce growth program really is designed to get at exactly that kind of thing. Wherever the hot areas are, you could almost call it an emergency type of a situation. Rather than saying, well, gee, next year the tech school is going to have this program so that we can meet this need 5 years down the line, what we're saying is employers come to us today and say, we need these people now. We can do something very quickly.
The skills gap issue, does it come down to there not being the educational opportunities within the area or just the access to the educational opportunities?
You know, there's a lot of different reasons. Sometimes, such as with nurses and with welders, that's been just a problem that's been festering for quite some time. And it's just a matter of creating greater capacity in the various training programs. Sometimes, you know, in particular with welders, for example, it may be a situation of we've got welders in one part of the state that are trained, but we need welders in a different part of the state. And so we just need to have the resources where they belong. But in other situations, a lot of times, you know, with things happening so fast these days, you know, we might a year from now have a need for people trained for something that we don't even have any idea today. And we want to be ahead of the curve, not behind the curve. And again, this is the type of thing where you get a business or a group of businesses or a local workforce development board that get together, put a proposal to the tech school and say, we will put some skin in the game to get these type of people trained. are you in? And it's a competitive grant program, and if it's something that the payback is there, the tech school has the ability then to say, you bet, we're in.
So can you explain exactly what is a rapid response grant?
The example that was given at our hearing, I think, is a really good one. Let's say that you have a community, and we'll use La Crosse. Let's say that in La Crosse we have three or four employers that need welders, and we can't find them. What they do is they get together and say, you know, on our own, not a single employer is going to have the ability to create a training program for welders. But together, you know, maybe this makes sense, that it is feasible. So we will go then to the tech school and say, look, we'll put some money into this program if we can get this grant so that you can do training for these welders at the tech school. And so that's where the money is spent, at the tech school, so that, you know, within the next few months, we will have those people available for working in our individual businesses. So it's a great partnership. And you know, the nice thing about the way the tech schools have been operating in recent years is that it really is hand in glove with our local employers. And so it's the kind of thing that makes sense right today, right now.
The way the bill is now, it would provide $10 million to the tech college system. But how would that money then itself be divvied out?
That's a statewide allocation, and so, you know, Western would be competing with Gateway and, you know, the other tech schools all across the state, and it would be probably on a rotating basis. That we had talked to the tech schools about, you know, the finer points on how, you know, how the details would work out, and they said, you know, if the bill is approved, they will then, you know, put the meat on the bones to tell us exactly how that would work, but probably something along the lines of a rotating application arrangement. And when the money runs out, the money runs out. But it's not the kind of thing where in January, everybody has to know what they're doing for the full year. And if you think of something or you have a need that comes up in April, you're too late.
A single business, a group of business, I think in the bill it also says workforce development boards, right, economic development organizations can all apply for these grants in conjunction with this partnership with each of the technical colleges?
Exactly. They would be the partners with the tech school. And the nice thing about that is it finds where the need is and has that them come to the tech schools. You know, we always try to project off into the future. You know, our university does, our tech schools do. You know, what are the high demand jobs going to be? What are the areas that we should be training? And you hope you get it right, but you don't always get it right. And so this allows us to do those kind of spot shortages. You know, if La Crosse needs this, maybe they don't need it over in Kenosha or Superior, but La Crosse needs this particular program, and some local employers or our workforce development board is willing to ante up some of their own, you know, funds for it, we can address that need. So it's very customized, very immediate.
And you mentioned they'd be able to put up some of their money in their own. So would it be almost like a matching grant type of program?
In most situations, I would envision that it would be, because $10 million statewide isn't a lot of money. Sure. So we're, you know, if somebody said, gee, we need you to create a new addition on our school for a welding program, well, that $10 million would be gone right there. So it's not going to be that kind of thing. The similar program is the Workforce Advancement Training Grants, also known as WAT grants, and those average out maybe like $30,000, $40,000. So what you're doing is it's kind of seed money or what we like to call gap funding to, you know, seal the deal. We've got other people that or entities that are, you know, willing to get it pretty close, but they need a location, you know, again, to use the example of welders. You know, the local businesses don't have the place to do it. The tech school has a facility. We, you know, get a grant to help for the faculty, maybe some materials and so forth. The businesses put in some of their materials and maybe just cash. And that puts the pieces of the pie together, and there is your program.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. My guest today is Representative Steve Doyle. He's a Democrat from La Crosse who's co-authored a bill that would help close the skills gap in Wisconsin and provide grants to businesses and technical colleges. Plenty of people who have signed on to the bill, but there's only been one Republican who's given his support.
Well, and unfortunately, that's kind of the state of things in Madison, is that there are very few bills that have a lot of members of both parties. And this was one that came, we called it the Democratic Jobs Package. And so we put together a number of different bills, you know, including this one. And I think there was some hesitancy on, you know, the part of members of the Republican Party to simply give our proposals credence and, you know, make it sound like, gee, you know, this is the new way of doing things and forget about what the Republicans had been proposing. And so there was some reluctance in that regard. But then as people have looked at them a little more deeply, we are finding that, you know, there is bipartisan support for the concept. So, you know, if this bill, say, was pulled and came in tomorrow, introduced by, you know, the committee chair, for example, it'd probably pass on a unanimous vote. Unfortunately, you know, the problem is that we still haven't gotten past that angst in Madison and that animosity that exists between the parties. But, you know, I think we're making some progress.
I was wondering, too, how much different parts of the state are really feeling this skills gap, because from who I've seen has signed on so far, there's a handful of senators and representatives from Western Wisconsin, Janesville area, Kenosha, Racine, Milwaukee, places that have strong technical colleges but also have seen a loss in manufacturing jobs over the years, too.
Well, manufacturing is certainly you know, one of the prime areas for needing assistance with regard to these programs or other types of programs. You know, Wisconsin is still one of the top manufacturing states in the country. I think I read recently Wisconsin and Indiana are the two that are still most reliant upon manufacturing. The need in La Crosse may not be the need in Janesville, for example. And so while they all support the program, it's for different reasons or for different types of needs that they have in their particular community. And so that's why you're seeing people from all over the state, again, for different reasons, but for that ultimate reason is we need more jobs and we need, you know, in our particular industry help. And that industry may be something in Janesville and something different in Racine, something different in La Crosse.
You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. My guest today is Representative Steve Doyle, a Democrat from Onalaska, who's co-authored a bill that would help close the skills gap in Wisconsin and provide grants to businesses and technical colleges. Why grant programs? Why not just back when the budget was being debated? Why not just fight for more money for the technical college system? It's had some budget cuts over the last handful of years.
It's an understatement. Well, that was a non-starter. You know, certainly there was a lot of talk about reinstating, you know, at least some of the cuts to the tech schools and the university too. I think there was a concern that, well, you wanted to cut the fat and get down to, you know, a very lean operation. And if we just give money back, are you kind of defeating what you'd tried to accomplish? So we weren't having much success in just adding money back into the budget for, you know, in this case, the tech schools. But so we thought, well, maybe we try a different approach, really focus like a laser on what particular needs are. So this money doesn't just go into the tech school bottom line, not into their general budget. It has to be used, this $10 million, just for this particular program so that you can see, you know, what I referred to at the committee hearing, deliverables. You know, we will give $40,000 to this proposal that will create 12 jobs, you know, that type of thing where you can see that connection there. And that's really what people are expecting these days out of government at all levels. You know, we see that at the county level where I've got a lot of background. We see it at the state level. Probably could use a little bit more of it at the federal level. But people do want to see what their money is actually going to produce in terms of results.
Do you think that this is a good alternative to the budget cuts?
It's a start. It doesn't replace everything because you can't, you know, for example, cut a number of faculty members and say, well, we're going to create one program for this particular need and think that you're solving all of the problems that resulted from those cuts. It fits a niche, but I wouldn't at all say that it solves the problem. You know, we looked at the budget cuts for the last two budgets, you know, as it related to education, in particular the tech schools, and scratched our heads saying, you know, I'm a product of the university, and you know I believe in what the university does, but I had to say the tech schools, man, those are the folks that create the jobs. I mean, right away, you know, a university, it's really maybe a longer-term premise, but if we need somebody today for, you know, a particular technical skill and you know, we're saying jobs, why do you cut the very entity that can, you know, produce the people for those jobs.
So if this bill does pass, you know, when you look a year down the line or 2 years down the line, what sort of difference do you see, maybe not only for Western Wisconsin, but for the entire state?
You know, this is the kind of program where I think that right now our local people, and I work very closely on these bills with Patty Balasek and Lee Rush from Western, you know, they could say, you know, we've got this program, you know, and this business, and we're ready to go right now with them. And that's great. And I think that what you're going to see is, as time goes on, more publicity about the program and even greater demand. And I think that that would be a good evolution of a program like this, where you start small, but then as time goes on, and again, it wouldn't replace the bottom line of the tech school budget, but does give that focus in terms of matching the need with the resources. So that's what I would hope to see, you know, in a couple of years as the word gets out about the program.
State Representative Steve Doyle of Onalaska talking about a bill he's co-authored that's designed to close the skills gap in Wisconsin. The bill had a hearing in a Senate committee last week, and Doyle hopes it will be voted on later this fall. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Mian Stroob, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this or other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You'll also find extended interviews, photos, and links to the bills. And if you'd like to comment on our program, or if you have a suggestion for future shows, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also find Newsmakers on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.